Coming up next, we're going to talk to my favorite, second favorite sci-fi author, Spider Robinson. This is Your Mac Life.
Looking for the perfect font? Introducing Typeset from VizSpring Software. Typeset is a font previewing application that makes designing a new logo, greeting card, or any document painless, quick, and easy. No more trial and error. Now there's a new way for all Mac users to view and organize their fonts. Typeset has a completely new core and powerful new features. You can customize Typeset like never before, and VizSpring has added new technologies that bring you blazingly fast font rendering speeds. They've added uninstalled font support, allowing you to view sets of fonts even though they aren't installed on your system. There's even new font searching options with font filtering and the ability to save them as smart favorites. Typeset is only $15 for new users, and if you're already a faithful registered user, it's absolutely free. Download the all-new Typeset for free at www.vizspring.com. While you're visiting, check out their other great time-saving and fun software. That's www.vizspring.com.
Macintosh radio commercials. Who would have thought? Hey, internet radio is a viable marketing medium just like traditional radio. And you, the sponsors, want to sound awesome when you're advertising to thousands of listeners every week on Your Mac Life. We're Third Light Digital Media, and we're working with Your Mac Life, the number one Macintosh radio show on the internet, to help you create effective internet audio and video commercials for your product or service. Contact us at info@thirdlight.com or visit our website at www.thirdlight.com. That's 3rdlight.com. We want to help you get your message across to your target audience, the Macintosh enthusiast.
Welcome back, folks. In our Marathon Computer phone room, I've got science fiction author Spider Robinson. Spider, how are you?
Just fine. How's about you?
I am very good. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, you're not a native Canadian, but you've lived in Canada for what, the last 30 years?
Something like that, yeah.
Where are you originally from?
A place down south called New York City.
A little town you might have heard of.
I was stunned to discover this Christmas. I went down to visit my daughter, who just got a new apartment in the Bronx, and without the slightest clue, she picked a place two blocks from where I grew up.
Cool. Now, how did you end up in Nova Scotia, my home province?
Basically, dumb luck, the same thing that served me so well all my life and professional career. Two friends who I introduced to each other in college, my roommate and an old friend, got married to each other. Mm-hmm. And this was in the late 60s, early 70s. All the hippies were going back to the land.
Yeah.
And so they headed north looking for land they could afford.
Had to go all the way to Canada for that.
Got as far as Nova Scotia before they got some. Excuse me, I'm going to change phones here.
Sure.
There we go. That one
Spider wrote the very first sci-fi book that I ever read as a kid that was set in my home province. Do you remember that book?
Could have been one of a couple.
Which was the first one?
Let's see. Thinking back now, probably Mind Killer.
There you go. Mind Killer. It was an amazing, amazing book. Very freaky. Had some concepts in it. With me as a kid, as a 10, 11, 12-year-old kid, I don't remember exactly when I first read it, actually made me start thinking about what I was reading. As a kid, I never considered that. But Mind Killer was an amazing book. It really, maybe it's not that now. I have to go back and read it, I guess. But it was really a mind-opening experience for me. And I really appreciate you writing that book set in Nova Scotia. It was very, very cool.
I was living there at the time. It just seemed like a natural thing to do.
You met your wife, Jean. You guys were married when you moved to Nova Scotia?
No. We met each other in Nova Scotia. We were both people who were wandering around looking for an alternative to living in the States and bumped into each other in the woods of Nova Scotia, of all places. Jeannie's from Boston. I'm from New York. And we were sort of refugees fleeing the sinking country.
And Jeannie's actually very well known in her own right as a dancer.
Yes, indeed. For the longest while there, she ran a dance company in Halifax, the finest one east of Montreal, basically making bricks without straw.
That's right.
For pretty much 10 years. It was called Nova Dance Theater.
At one point, Jeannie was supposed to go up in the space shuttle.
Yeah, yes, she was indeed. By dumb luck, she wasn't the first one picked. But our phone rang off the hook all day long when the Challenger exploded.
Yeah, no kidding.
Journalists who found Jeannie's name in the files. Basically, NASA had finally figured out the public doesn't seem as excited about space as we are.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if we showed them, a good-looking woman dancing in free fall, or something other than jocks and scientists, because that's basically all they'd sent up. They thought, why don't we send up a poet? Maybe he'll write a poem that will inspire people, or a songwriter who will sing something that will make people want to put money into space, something. You know, let's try the arts. Let's try a teacher. Let's try a journalist. John Denver, the folk singer, was on the list.
Yeah.
And by rotten bad luck, the first one they sent up was Krista McAuliffe,
yeah,
who they killed.
That's right.
And that was the end of the civilian space program.
Pretty much.
for our lifetime, anyhow. It might come back again one day. But partly as a result, it was only just very recently, in the last days of Mir, I think it was, that for the first time in history, there happened to be two musicians on board at the same time, and music was played in space.
Cool.
An actual musical interaction, the first guitar jam. The Russian had an acoustic, and the American had some sort of high-tech folding guitar. And, apparently they jammed for quite a while in space, but, you know, stuff like that could have been happening 30 years ago, except for the pesky bad luck that the first civilian to go up died.
Yeah, no kidding. Tell me about your writing style. You've written books that run the gamut from traditional science fiction to what I would consider to be non-traditional, the Callahan series. Do you intentionally go to pick a subject matter or a style that's non-traditional or traditional, or does this stuff just flow out of your fervent imagination?
I'm just trying to keep myself awake at the typewriter. I failed every science course I ever took, save one in school, and so what little science I do know, I basically got from reading other science fiction. And I do that a lot. I read a lot of science fact, too, and you can't do that for very long without story ideas popping up, and sometimes they take you into some strange and twisted places. But there's never any conscious decision-making going on here. It's not as though I have a master plan. Just each time I finish a book, I look around for what of all the ideas that have occurred to me in the last year, which is the one that I think I would find least onerous to spend a year locked in a room with.
talk about some of the awards you won. You are a Hugo Award winner.
Yes, indeed. Hugo tickles me. The temptation is to take the easy way out and say it's the Oscar of science fiction. But technically, the Oscar of science fiction is the Nebula Award, which is voted only by science fiction writers, the Science Fiction Writers of America, and a few editors and agents and other people who have been able to talk their way in as professionals. The Hugos, on the other hand, unique among arts awards, except for maybe the Nova Scotia Fiddle Championships and the All-Star Game, the Hugo Awards are voted by the customer.
Yeah.
By anyone on the planet who wants to bother. Anybody out there who wants to vote for next year's Hugo, each year just to join as a supporting member, it costs you about $25.
Mm-hmm.
You join the World Science Fiction Convention, which this year, fellow Canadians, happens to be held in Toronto.
Yay!
Labor Day weekend. Yay! And you just become a member. You don't necessarily have to come to the convention. You still get a Hugo ballot, comes to you in the mail, and you get to tell those nice publishers what you like to read.
Cool.
In terms that they understand. And believe me, they listen. You know, there have been times in history when a Hugo Award has been decided by as few as a dozen votes.
Wow.
And yet, the guy who happened to get the lucky dozen probably got 10 or 20 grand more the next time he went in to sell a book. And
yeah,
that can make the difference between, you know, doing this for a living or doing this on the side while you sell real estate.
Now, you are writing all this stuff on a power book, a rather older model power book. When I was up there in Vancouver, you were actually using it on an ancient Wall Street, weren't you?
As a matter of fact, what I'm using now is, I'm pretty sure it's a Wall Street. I'm not positive what model. It's a G3.
Yeah.
It's a good 3-4 years old. But from my point of view, it's not old at all. Until very recently, I was writing on a 1400.
Yeah.
And the 1400 was on a 28.8 CompuServe line. I live on an island. We didn't have high-speed cable.
You live on Bowen Island, don't you?
Yeah. And it's reached a point now where, thanks to high-speed cable coming out here, thanks to this G3, it used to take 4.5 minutes for the Amazon.com homepage to load.
Oh, man.
On my PowerBook. It now takes between 4 and 6 seconds.
That's pretty good.
So I'm only just in the last month or two starting to understand why everybody else is so excited about the World Wide Web. But for me, it was the World Wide Wait.
Yeah, no kidding.
It is pretty cool.
Colia Caminieres, who's in Vancouver, says, what's your favorite place on Bowen Island to have coffee? There's only like two, isn't there?
there are a dozen good places. Unfortunately, for not being able to plug my friends, but the best place is right here in my house. A fanatical German fan named Daniel Finger from Berlin, for no reason that I can explain to you, sent me out of the blue an enormous, elaborate Swiss coffee robot that basically you pour in raw beans and you pour in water. And whenever you want coffee, you push a button, and it grinds the beans, makes the coffee by the French press method, then dumps the grounds into a disposal hopper, cleans itself out, and waits for your next command.
Oh, cool.
It's the most remarkable machine, and it makes better coffee than I ever could. Every cup is fresh ground.
Man,
really.
You got to send me the name of that coffee robot, because I want that, too.
It's a Swiss company called Jura, J-U-R-A.
J-U-R-A, I'll
check
that out.
It's called a Jura, let's see, what the hell is it, Jura Espresso. Because it's got a little steam hose on it. If you like foam coffees, it'll do that. It'll make cups of tea. It'll make soup. It's just the most amazing machine. It does everything but basically turn itself on and off.
So you don't have the what I would have assumed would be the sci-fi techno lust of wanting the latest and greatest of everything, including computer equipment. You're quite happy using what other people would consider to be an ancient power book.
No, I have the same lust everybody else does. This is just how well science fiction writing pays.
Ah.
I got to wait for them to come into my price range secondhand.
I see. I understand.
And even at that, there's still things I lust for the life of me, I can't seem to obtain.
And that being the case, you went on to eBay to try to get a new computer and got ripped off rather severely, didn't you?
I did indeed, yeah. I basically paid somebody about $1,000 for a couple of entertaining emails.
Ouch.
And, yeah, I got took good. It served me right. I should have been paying closer attention, but I thought I was.
Yeah, I mean, reading your story in the Globe and Mail Wednesday, December 11th, I was surprised that not only was eBay completely unresponsive to your concerns, but you did what you're supposed to do. You checked out the reports on the person, and everything seemed fine from your end, right?
Well, I just didn't scrutinize closely enough. Yeah. I double-checked. I didn't triple-check. I looked at the seller's profile, the online data supplied from previous customers, and it was all pretty good.
Yeah.
And if I'd thought to look at them all side by side together at once and compare them, I might have noticed that all the dates were pretty old.
Yeah.
And that no date was more recent than a couple of years ago. And indeed, it turned out that eBay identity was someone who hadn't been on eBay in 2 years.
Ouch.
Some clever bastard out there stole their identity and used it to milk a bunch of us. I know of it personally, of at least a half a dozen other people that this guy got. And the worst part of it all, of course, is that after you discover you've been burned, I went to find out, who's a relevant international Interpol-type authority to report. It turns out that the relevant authority here is the two constables out here on my island.
Yeah, Corporal Greg Louis of the RCMP, and that was pretty much it, wasn't it?
That's about it. Yeah. Unfortunately, the Globe and Mail misspelled his name. But you get your one shot in print, and they spell your name wrong. It's actually Louis. Sorry about that, Constable Greg.
The issue of fraud on eBay is not nearly as widespread as what the facts are. Do you believe that?
I have no idea. Yeah. I'm in no position to guess. Yeah. All I know is I got an awful lot of indignant mail from people who felt that they, too, had been burned. And maybe they're just, people who weren't paying close attention like me. I don't know.
Are you soured on eBay now?
Well, I haven't been back. I participated in two auctions, and both of them were frauds. I took that as a clue. The first one, the eBay notified me it was a fraud before the auction closed.
Yeah.
The second time, I notified eBay. I figured I'm 0-2. What's that old Voltaire line about once a philosopher, twice a pervert? If I go back again, I'm a masochist. Let's face it.
I love that line, by the way. You've got a bunch of stuff that's being reissued or re-released, aren't you? A lot of the Callahan stuff.
I'm happy to say just about everything I've ever written is back in print.
Cool.
I can't account for this because this is a rotten time in history to get your backlist back in print, but yeah. I guess I've got some editors out there believing me.
What do you think is your appeal in the sci-fi fiction, in sci-fi? I've heard from so many people who are fans with completely different backgrounds. There doesn't seem to be a common thread in your fan base.
I don't know. I can't account for it myself. I'm pleased that there's somebody out there turning the pages. I never have had a hypothetical reader in mind. It's always just been, I started out in this business writing the book that I wanted to read, but I didn't happen to have one with me, so out of necessity, I ended up writing my own. And it's been like that pretty much ever since. I write to keep myself amused at the typewriter, and thank God my sense of humor seems to coincide with a lot of other people.
But I have to complain about the puns in the Callahan books. See, I'm not smart enough to get them, so I'll sit there and look at the page for like 20 minutes going, what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah, well, sometimes, you know, it might not be your fault. So there's one famous occasion when I spent the first four pages of a novel setting up a pun. And in the first edition in paperback, 125,000 copies, the typesetter at the last, after it passed me, the editor, the copy editor, the proofreader, the typesetter went, oh, there's a mistake, I'll fix that for them, and removed the pun. And the first four pages of the book were spent setting up nothing.
Nothing.
the first four pages built to the dreadful line, it was a dark and stormy night when suddenly the snot ran out.
Oh, yeah.
And the typesetter fixed that and changed it to the shot rang out, and no shot rings out that night or any other night in the book, so it must have confused the hell out of a lot of people.
No kidding.
These things happen in the biz, you know.
You just roll with them and move on.
Yeah, not really. I was told when I first got into this business that I was making a terrible, terrible mistake writing funny science fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
That I would never make a dime.
That's
because
right.
The guy said science fiction itself is a limited enough taste.
Yeah.
There's a small enough market, but no two people agree on what's funny.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, by definition, as soon as you write funny science fiction, you've only got half of what was originally a very small market.
Yeah, that's right.
At best.
That's right.
And I can find nothing wrong with his logic. I'll only say that this was 30 years ago, and he's been out of the business for 29 years, and I'm still around. So.
And the thing is, the science fiction up until you, at least, in my mind, was always very, it wasn't stuffy, but it was always very self-important. Science fiction was about the future, about man's place in the universe, and it wasn't about guys drinking Callahan's, you know? It wasn't about that. It wasn't supposed to be about that. Did you find that other sci-fi authors that didn't treat you with the respect you felt you deserved because of the comedy aspect of your sci-fi?
No, I can't say so. I've never been conscious of anything like that. You know, God bless them, they gave me their Nebula Award way back for Stardance. So I got it was from that either they laugh at the same things I do or they forgive me my attempts to be funny. You know?
Good.
Often I run into somebody who absolutely despises puns, and then I inquire how he knows that my work is full of puns, and it turns out he's read it cover to cover. So what the hell is this?
One of the things I think, though, that I heard from a lot of fans of yours, that the reason why you are so popular is the fact that you go to a lot of science fiction conventions. You are out there. I remember going into a bar in Halifax and seeing you sitting in the corner of the bar writing away at one of your novels. You're very accessible in that manner. You go to a lot of the sci-fi conventions. You go to places where the average person is. I've seen you on Granville Island in Vancouver. Do you think that's part of it? Is that you're very accessible and you're very approachable?
Well, I guess. I don't know. Like I say, there really is no master plan. I'm making this up as I go along.
What are you working on now, or what have you just finished recently?
Just finished a new Callahan's book. It'll be out in August.
Yay!
Just read aloud from it last night in Deep Cove.
Oh, yeah?
The cultural center there. It's called Callahan's Con. And those longtime readers who remember a book called Callahan's Lady may be interested to know that the villain this time around is the son of Tony Donuts. This will mean nothing whatsoever to anyone else, but those who are familiar with that book may get a thrill from knowing that one of the original man monsters of science fiction has spawned and his offspring is returning. It's kind of like Son of Kong time.
We got our crew in the back. Any possibility of you doing a reading for us now? You're not ready for that, though, are you?
Oh, let's see. Hang on a second. Well, as we speak, I'll hunt around in the hard drive and see if there's anything suitable. The thing I'd like to talk about is Murphy's Law and why it seems to affect my Macintosh. I keep running into problems that nobody else has. I mean, it sounds stupid, but it's the truth. For instance, I've got this spiffy new G3 now, 450 megahertz, and to me this is a smoking computer.
Sure.
And it's got an internal CD drive, I never had that before, and I got iTunes on there.
Mm-hmm.
And now so I go to rip tracks off of an audio CD onto my hard drive.
Yep.
And everybody else in the world can do it with this Mac and with this model or CD drive and everybody. But when I try it, I get a little dialog box no one else has ever seen that says, your computer does not support digital data extraction. Digital data extraction has been disabled. And
okay.
Then it goes away. And nobody knows what this means. I've got several Mac wizards for friends and even one or two Mac warlocks. And in absolute desperation, I've become friends with Jeff Raskin over the years. and nobody can explain what the hell this means or how to go about enabling digital data extraction.
This is on OS 9, right?
Yeah, OS 9. We tried. Now, this is another weird thing. A friend of mine suggested upgrading to 9.2.
Yeah.
So I upgraded to 9.2, and for a week, I could rip tracks. And then, one day, I just started getting this box back. Digital data extraction has been disabled. By whom? For what reason? I don't know.
Who the hell did it? Yeah.
What's going on? Similarly, the same guy that sold me this computer secondhand sold me a color scanner. It's a lovely scanner. It always worked for him. But no matter what I do or what cables I use, how many times I replace and check the connections, when I hook up the scanner and fire up the software says, I can't open. There's no scanner attached.
Yes,
another weird one. I got a fast computer. I thought, oh, well, I can download RealPlayer.
Yeah.
You know, I've been hearing all the stuff about RealPlayer files for years now, and my computer was too slow to run them.
Yeah.
But now I can do it. So I went to the Real website and followed all the instructions and said, and now click here, and you'll be at the page where you can download RealPlayer 8. And I clicked there, and I get a 404, no such page.
Yeah. Real Audio doesn't want you to download the free version of the player.
Well, I call up one of my wizard friends, and I explain the problem, and he says, no, that couldn't be. Wait one second. He goes, while we're on the phone together, he goes to his computer with the identical URL that I used, following the same instructions the same way, he gets RealPlayer 8. I follow the same instructions, identical. We go through it step by step. I get 404. He gets the page.
You're cursed.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody can explain this, but by now I'm used to it. By now, when something inexplicably and mysteriously fails to work, I just assume it's me.
Yeah, no kidding.
But if anybody out there has any idea what the hell digital data extraction disabling is and how to undo it, boy, would I love to hear.
Well, Kalia wants us to remind you that there's a very good but small computer group on Bowen Island, about 15 folks that are very Mac knowledgeable. Have you hooked up with them yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, what I'll do is I will get their information from Kalia and send it off to you via email, and maybe you can give one of those guys a call, because there is a small, I've heard about these guys, there is a small group of folks on Bowen Island who have their own little Macintosh user group, and you might want to contact one of those guys and see if someone there can come over to your place.
Right. I sort of worked my way up the wizard hierarchy, you know, almost as far as like Harry Potter himself.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So far, everybody's mystified, and nobody else can duplicate the problem on their machine, you know?
Yeah. I think I know what the problem is, but we'll let the guys right there physically where you are on Bowen Island to help you out. It sounds like a missing extension of some kind, but it's not easy enough to diagnose over the air.
Yeah, I'm mystified. Why would it work for a week and stop?
And then stop, exactly.
You know, did it just decide, you shouldn't be doing this? You're probably violating copyright.
Exactly, that's right. You're a bad spider.
As a matter of fact, I was.
Probably
I was
are.
Trying to rip tracks from my own damn CD onto my own damn computer, and I can't do it.
Did you have something to read?
I'm sorry. I got sidetracked, and I never did get around to doing that. I'll be more diligent as we speak.
But we can also, if you can, talk about, I didn't realize until I went to your website just recently, that you've now got out your own CD.
Yeah.
Your own music CD.
See, what I always wanted to be when I grew up was a musician. Unfortunately, what I wanted to be when I grew up was a folk musician.
Yeah.
There was a brief period in history most of your listeners are probably too young to recall, but Martin Mull referred to as the great folk music scare. You know, for a while there seemed some brief danger that crap would catch on.
Exactly. That's right. And there's less money in folk music than there is in sci-fi, man.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. You know, fortunately, wiser heads prevailed. Folk blew over, and we all decided in our infinite wisdom to invent disco instead.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the reasons I ended up becoming a science fiction writer in the first place.
To fight
and,
disco?
Then 25, 30 years later, by ridiculous irony, some guys call me up and say, hi, we're a computer game company. We'd like to make a computer game out of your Callahan's Place stories.
Cool.
I said, fine. I charged them plenty.
then they
said, we heard, Spider, you know, that you're like a musician, or you used to write songs and stuff, and we wondered if by any chance you might be interested in recording some of your original music to be used as the soundtrack for this computer game. Of course, I said, get those damn reindeer off of my roof, fatso. I fell upon this with glad cries of gratitude and said, I'd love to. And by ridiculous coincidence, that night, my favorite musician in the world, the greatest living guitar player, Amos Garrett, mm-hmm. of Turner Valley, Alberta, came to town to play a local gin mill that he used to play. I won't name because they've stopped booking him. And I went to see Amos, and when he came down off the stand on the break, I related the ironic little story about 25, 30 years after I bombed out of the music business, some idiot's going to give me money to record some tunes in a real studio with real musicians. And Amos said, "Got a guitar player?" Well, actually, you know, Amos didn't say that because Amos' voice is about 3 octaves lower than that. "Got a guitar player?" Something like that. And when I finished removing my jaw from the floor and reattached it to my face, I hired him on the spot. Mm-hmm. And in the fullness of time, recorded 4 tracks with some of the best musicians in Vancouver. Mike Kraber on the piano, Danny Cassavan on guitar, Noob Newcomb on bass. They were just great players. And with my favorite musician on lead guitar. The only thing left on my list now is to jam with Paul McCartney and Ray Charles, and I'll be ready to die.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, Amos is just, anybody who doesn't know his work, oh, are you in for a treat.
Folks, you can go to SpiderRobinson.com on the left-hand side. There's a link to the CD, and Spider has got a few MP3 files of those links, of those up there. And just, they're about 30 seconds long, but even those 30 seconds make you want to run out and buy the CD to hear the rest of the songs.
Because bless your hearts.
He writes, his songs are very much like his books. They're just page-turners and things that you want to continue listening.
Well, there's only 4 songs. That's all the computer game company recorded before they unfortunately died about a week after releasing the game. But the 4 songs are filled out on this CD basically by me reading aloud from my last book, Callahan's Key.
Well, you got to do more tunes.
We're actually talking about a second album now, because I had to record a demo to persuade the computer game company to come up with some money.
Sure.
And so now we're making mumbling noises about running Spider Robinson Unplugged.
Cool. I look forward
to
that.
In other words,
one.
Too cheap to hire any musicians.
That's right. Or electricity.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, let's try this one more time. Do you have a reading for us?
I'll take a crack at it, though. Let's see what I can come up with here. Well, unfortunately, I'm looking for the funny spots, and I can't find the damn thing. Alrighty. Let's see. Tum-tum-tum-tiddly-tiddly-tiddly-tiddly-tum. Okay, here's the best I can come up with. "Excuse me," said a stranger's voice. It had taken that long for her to make it as far as the bar. I'd noticed her doing a larger-than-usual amount of gawking around at the place on her way to the bar, examining it intently enough to have been grading it by some unknown criteria. I turned to see her now, and a vagrant shaft of sunlight pierced the crimson leaves overhead, forcing me to hold up a hand to block it, with the net effect that I probably looked as though I were saluting. It seemed appropriate. The short, pale Caucasian woman who stood there was in that Key West winter heat, so crisp and straight and stiff and in all details inhumanly perfect that I might well have taken her for a member of the military. But she wore her severe business suit and glasses as if they were a uniform, and in place of a sidearm she carried something much deadlier. From a distance I had taken it for a purse. The moment I recognized it for what it really was, I started to hear a high, distant buzzing in my ears. A briefcase with an elaborate crest on it that was unmistakably some sort of official seal. I felt a cold, clammy sweat spring out on my forehead and testicles. Suddenly, I was deep down terrified for the first time in over a decade. A bureaucrat was in my house.
That's brilliant. Spider Robinson, thank you very much for entertaining me personally for the last 20 minutes. I really appreciate it.
Bless your heart. I look forward to running out. Two of the vital organs of your choice.
I look forward to running out and rebuying all of your books because you've rekindled the love of Callahan and his lady and all the other things that you've been doing over the past 30 years. So thank you very much, folks. The website is SpiderRobinson.com. You can go to our Amazon link and pick up any number of his books, or go to his website, SpiderRobinson.com, and pick up his CD. It's a steal at $4.95 US, so please head on over there and help a poor spider out. So folks, we're talking to Spider Robinson. Spider, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me tonight.
Thank you again, sir.
It was a joy. Bye-bye.
We've got to start meeting this way.
I hope so. I hope we can do this again. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Sometime again.